If you look back to Genesis 26, verses 6 to 11, actually, is that my reference? That's not my reference. Ignore me. Ignore me. I didn't see that. So unless we have any other questions about 1 through 19, I'll move on to the next section, which is chapter 19. So in the beginning,
looking at verse 30, and it says, "Thus you are to keep my charge, that you do not practice any of the abominable customs which have been practiced before you." Like, that's showing that, like, a lot of these things are taking place around them, and it's showing us what kind of evil they were living amongst. Like, there's a lot of nastiness happening, and God is trying to keep them from defiling themselves, make them different from these outside forces. And, Solomon says there's nothing new under the sun. Like, we might think, like, oh, the world's so evil now. Like, the world was evil then, too. And God always makes a way that's better. He wants us to be better than what's around us.
No, certainly. I think that can definitely be applied to our current situation, you know, as Christians today. We see the world, you know, has strayed in a lot of different ways. And, a lot of even most other major religions seem to agree on a lot of different things, like sex out of marriage is not a good thing, and these different laws seem to be something that's across the playing field. But in our modern Western society, we've kind of strayed a little bit from that, and we're kind of a lot more loose with it. And God is the one that kind of brings balance to that and kind of reels us back in and brings the balance back to that. So yeah, definitely a good point there. What else?
Which is saying that when we get to the New Testament, there are a lot of things that are assumed that we know. For example, when he talks about sexual immorality, Paul and Jesus and Peter don't go into a lot of detail about what is sexual immorality. They kind of assume that there's this backdrop of understanding. I think some of that understanding comes from the Old Testament and some of the ideas that we have here. These are helpful passages even to help us to define what is sexual immorality, what is fornication. So I think even though this is part of the old law, these were things that the nations were condemned about. And so it's not just Jews that had to follow these things, but the nations are condemned. And so this is helpful for us to be able to define what is sexual immorality even today.
So,
also, I feel like often, you know, at least in this Bible class, there's been many times where it's like, oh, I wish God told us more about that situation, or more, like, it was just a sentence. Like, why can't there be more to that? And then we get to this, we get to Leviticus, and it's like, as detailed and, like, so much. But it's refreshing because there is no question on what is not good, you know, and it's very laid out here. So it's just interesting though, like, after this happens, clearly, you know, stuff continues to happen. Today it happens, but it's just like, it was laid out, it's here, you know, and it's a nice reminder that it's like, you got everything right here, you know, and it's as detailed as you can get.
It really kind of shows us how much he loves us and that he doesn't want us to mess up, and he leaves no room for, like, you know, mistaking the interpretation or for error in that way. It's like, I want to tell you exactly how things are supposed to be and what exactly not to do, because these are things that I don't like, and it's not that I don't trust you, but I don't trust you to just assume what's good
and
bad.
Yeah, well, clearly, you know, they, like Mayor was saying, you know, this was happening. So some of the things that are said, it's like, it's almost comical to be like some of these things, like, what, this was happening? But like, it is, and it's just like, because I can't imagine that God is going to put this down in writing if it wasn't actually happening, which is, it's terrifying, you know. So it's just nice to have all the information.
You see some of these examples play out in family of the kings, so not anybody kingdom, but I think it's, I mean, also, I mean, kind of the Abby's point, there's a explicit of what's wrong and what's right. So there's very clear line.
And it's, I'd like to also point out the fact that in a lot of these different examples that are laid out, they're related to one another, in that they're drawn back to the flesh, right? And so, in some of these situations, they seem kind of obvious, but like, if you, like, take, you shall not uncover the nakedness of a woman, and of her daughter, and you shall not take your son's daughter or or her daughter's daughter to uncover the nakedness because they are relatives, and it's depravity. Like, we don't have to think about that, but the fact that they, you know, that it's spelled out that way, and he has to tell you, like, if you do that, you're basically assaulting your own flesh. It's like, you have to put it in that context and make them really understand why it's bad. And like, for us, that's easy to understand, but for them, you need that extra context, I suppose, because it's normal back then.
You also see the severity of doing these things in verse 29, where it does any of these abominations, those persons who do so shall be cut off from among their people. So, I mean, that just shows the severity of, you know, we had the studies of discipline, and, you know, talking about discipline, it can be so, it's tough, you know, no one wants to have discipline happen, but, I mean, this is just another example of how discipline is so important when there's sin.
Yes, without discipline, it's just going to still, you know, continue. There's a word for that, and I just didn't have it. But you know that. All right. Any other questions for this section? Or any other thoughts? All right. Cool. So we can move on to verse 19, chapter 19. And so chapter 19, we see we're talking about the Lord being holy and loving our neighbors and different things like that, and also repeating the ideas of keeping statutes. So in verse 1 through 5, you see the Lord talking to Moses again, saying, "Speak to all the congregation of the people of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord, your God, am holy. Every one of you shall revere his mother and his father, and you shall keep my Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. Do not turn to idols or make yourselves any gods of cast metal. I am the Lord your God." So this is a very, seems to me like a very general restating of his position. I'm God, hold my Sabbaths, honor your parents, and don't turn to idols, right? And that's a very broad sweeping, and it kind of umbrellas a lot of different things. And so it also shows the importance of honoring your parents. You know, he singled that out specifically, and so I feel like that actually has a lot more importance than you might think. Honoring one's mother and fathers, you know, they were the ones that helped give you life and things like that. So, I definitely think in this day and age, that's kind of forgotten, I feel like. I know a lot of friends my age who don't really have very good relationships with their parents, and a lot of times it's because they don't even really try. And, you know, I understand that I don't know every situation perfectly, but a heart, that's why I'm kind of glad that I'm Christian and I know God, because a heart that's willing to forgive and try to mend is a heart that's just willing to have no abuse. A heart that turns to bitterness and is kind of closed off will always lead to real broken relationships. And so even when people, you know, are saying, like, you know, they don't like their parents, it always kind of makes me sad, because, you know, God sees the importance of honoring our parents and, you know, where our life came from. And so I think that's a very significant part of the vision. So, moving on, verse 5 says, "When you offer sacrifice of peace offerings to the Lord, you shall offer it so that it may be accepted. It shall be eaten the same day you offer it, or on the day after, and anything left over until the third day shall be burned up with fire. If it is eaten at all on the third day, it is tainted, will not be accepted, and everyone who eats it shall bear its iniquity, because he has profaned what is holy to the Lord, and that person shall be cut off from his people. So in this section, we get more context about sacrifices, and he wants people he's talking to do the sacrifice and eat it within the first 2 days. Now, I had a couple theories as to why the sacrifice became unholy after on the third day. One of them might be that it's just because food got old, and so it's starting to rot, and so we need to do it quickly because it's going to lose its sanitary value and become unholy and unclean. Another idea is that that you kind of waited on it, like when you want to do a sacrifice, you do the sacrifice, and it's like, all right, I'm gonna just wait till tomorrow. It's like, okay, I got the sacrifice, I'm just gonna wait till the next day. It's kind of like you're waiting to sacrifice to God. It's like, why don't you just do it? So that could be another element. This last one might be me just pulling for straws, but when me and Justin were discussing the resurrection of Christ, and we talked about how people today are quote unquote revived, via defibrillators and things like that. Their heart stops and they go to the hospital and they shock them a couple times and they come back, right? But we were talking about how that's not actually really a true death, and that there are ideas in the Bible that suggest that the soul lingers for a while, but after 3 days it's pretty much gone, right? And so that's why Christ's resurrection is so significant, because it's not that he came back after an hour or a day or 2 days, but 3 days once the soul has already passed, which is seems impossible. He's dead, and that's what makes his resurrection a lot more significant. And so a theory of mine is that another reason why it might be considered unholy is because maybe a spiritual significance of the animal after 3 days has just lifted off of it. It just does, it's not there anymore, similar to how the soul lingers and leaves. And so, but that could just be me stretching and reaching, so I don't expect anybody to actually take that completely seriously, but it's a thought that I have.
So I think it's good to say that it's specifically called out peace offerings, because that's an offering that you offer up for reconfirmation of a covenant that's made, whether between you and God or you and another person. And that's the restriction.
Gleanings of your after your harvest. You shall not strip your vineyard bare, neither shall you gather the fallen grapes in your vineyard. You shall eat them for the poor and for the sojourner. I am the Lord your God. And so in this section we see him talking about how we treat other people and loving your neighbor, loving the poor who are out there, leaving an extra portion out there for them. And so in this way he teaches us to be kind to one another, who teaches us humility, but he's also in a way taking care of those who have less. And so this is something that he's saying he's taking seriously, because he's telling people to do this. And so he's basically knocking out a couple birds with one stone. Going on, it says, you shall not steal, you shall not deal falsely, you shall not lie to one another, you shall not swear by name falsely, and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. Shall not oppress your neighbor or rob him. The wages of a hired worker shall not remain with you all night until the morning. You shall not curse the deaf or put a stumbling block before the blind, but you shall fear your God. I am the Lord. So, once again, we see him talking more about just generally how to treat people, and you see him once again in this section giving specific situations so that there's no stone unturned, and so that in every given situation how to act and what to do and how to move forward accordingly. And so I think this would be really important for people who are reading that. Yes, David?
very specific, but also it's very general. Just you know, how often does the, do some of these come up where you know, kids are putting stumbling blocks before the blind? Is that really a temptation for a lot of people? Is that but I think it talks more generally about don't do unjust things. Think about people that are defenseless and don't take advantage of that. And so it's more, while it's very specific to a specific situation, it's giving us an idea because of who God is, then this is the type of people we need to be. And so while it's specific, but it's very general as well. We can take this and things like these we ought not to do as well. So don't put stumbling blocks, but also don't put a dog in front of a blind person. Or don't put a bush in front of a person. You know, it's not just stumbling blocks. There are other things. But it's just don't take advantage of those who are have difficulties.
Good thoughts. Verse 17, and only, you shall not hate your brother in your heart, but you shall reason frankly with your neighbor, lest you incur sin because of them. You shall not take vengeance or bear a grudge against the sons of your own people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. So this part, I feel, is really significant and can have a lot of good application to our, you know, modern day situation. A lot of people I see, especially in the environment I grew up in, instigating fights is just something that people did, you know, because that's how people kept themselves entertained, sadly. And so it was very common to see people, you know, want to start fights over anything. That's usually where it goes, and whatever two people come into conflict doesn't end in just words. But in this section, it's taking a step further. It's not just saying don't put your hands on each other, but don't even talk to each other in a way that's disrespectful or that could start a conflict in the first place. You know, deal with each other justly and talk with each other justly. Don't hold grudges with one another. And that's something that I feel a lot of people struggle with.
Yeah. I think, too, it goes into, like, just communication in general. Because I think, you know, we talked about last week before in class around anger, like that's an emotion you have, but talk about it. You know, like, don't just let that build up inside of you, hold grudge. Like, go and talk to your neighbor if you have a problem, you know, this context, whoever it is that you're dealing with. Don't just let that build up, burn inside of you, turn it into something, make it something bigger than what it was to begin with.
Most things can really be solved with a civil discourse. I was actually. This is just something I was thinking about when you were talking. I was thinking about this one YouTuber that I watch. He's a born again Christian recently, and so he talks about how him and his wife deal with conflict between each other. And every time that they might, you know, she might catch an attitude with him, or they might, you know, come butt heads sometimes. He just asks her, "Hey, look, let's pray together. Like right now. Don't wait on it. Don't none of that. Let's just pray together and talk about it with God, and then we separate and then we come back together, and then usually that just dispels everything, right?" And so at the end of the day, I feel that that's an example of how God gives us the keys to always come out with a peaceful solution. You know, conflict doesn't pretty much never has to be the answer, but our human desire for, you know, excitement and conflict is just conflicts with that. So, yeah, but God always gives us an exit that can be a peaceful solution. David?
I just, again, I was thinking about how so many of these, the laws that we have here, are a repetition of the Ten Commandments. It's just a one after another, even down to the keep the Sabbath day holy. You know, honor your father and mother. Make sure you don't steal. Make sure you don't murder. Just so many of these are just, it's a rehashing of some of these very fundamental ideas. It has so much to do with, well, this is because this is the character of God. This is the God that we serve, and so this is the type of morality that we need to have because we serve this God. But it's also significant that in this passage that we just read, you shall not hate your fellow countrymen, in your heart just illustrates that the religion of the Old Testament was not just an exterior religion, but God had anticipations or expected his people to have a religion of the heart. So it's just a very, he does not just want people that go through certain rituals and an exterior religion, but even in the Old Testament, and especially in the New Testament, but even in the Old Testament, it was a religion of the heart.
In this section, we also see him repeat once again, "I am the Lord your God," multiple times. So we need to think about how, who or what our God is. It shapes our lives and our thinking. He gives us our moral framework. And so if we're not following God's teaching, then it's like, what God are we serving? And so God's teachings are his teachings, his word, is what shapes us into his people. And so him claiming us, or him claiming the Jews at this time, makes them his people, but there's also that element of they need to also reciprocate his teachings back to them and to follow them, because that's how they truly embody being of God's body. So to recap of all the different things, kindness towards the poor and the stranger, speaking truth because of God wants us to, honorable dealing with others, to see justice, and God commanding their hearts, telling them to not hate but to speak truthfully, and not to take vengeance but to love one another. And so, in the next section, we see a collection of miscellaneous laws, in verses 19 through 37. You shall keep my statutes. You shall not let your cattle breed with different kind. You shall not sow your field with two kinds of seed, nor shall you wear garments of cloth made of two kinds of material. We had in verse 20, we have another example of sexual immorality. If a man lies with a woman who is a slave assigned to another man and not yet reasoned, or not yet ransomed or given her freedom, a distinction shall be made, and they shall not be put to death, because she was not free. But he shall bring his compensation to the Lord, to the entrance of the tent of meeting, a ram for the guilt offering. The priest shall make atonement for him with the ram of guilt offering before the Lord for his sins that he has committed, and he shall be forgiven for the sin he has committed. So, in this section, we see what happens when someone has relations with a slave woman, and how that's rectified. And so she's not, it doesn't seem as though she's held at fault because she wasn't free. And so it seems like he takes into account that she might not have had place in that situation, given her position. And he also gives the man in the situation a way out, in that he makes a guilt offering before the Lord. And so that's just another situation. Once again, that's a very specific situation. I don't know how often that would happen, but it's there just in case. So, verse 23 and on, when you come into the land and plant any kind of tree or food, you shall regard its fruit as forbidden. 3 years it shall be forbidden to you. It must not be eaten. And in the fourth year, all its fruit shall be holy, an offering of praise to the Lord. But the fifth year, you may eat out of this fruit to increase its yield for you. I am the Lord your God. So, this is instruction for planting fruit, apparently. I didn't realize that there were actual limitations placed on when you can eat, but I suppose there's a lot of things in here that I guess we don't understand right away, but this is God's word, so he knows better. And if waiting 3 years makes it holy, then I suppose he knows better. He's the one that designed it. it so we, you know, so we don't. Moving on, we shall not eat flesh with blood in it. Once again, we're going back to re-emphasizing the relationship with blood and, you know, how we don't eat flesh with it. You shall not interpret omens or tell fortunes. You shall not run off the hair on your temples. You shall not round off the hair on your temples or mar the edges of your beard. You shall not make any cuts on your body for the dead or tattoo yourself. I am the Lord. So, very specific rules. I don't understand. I'm not going to sit here and pretend to understand everything and why. But the first part, you shall not interpret omens or tell fortunes. A lot of this might have to do with, like, witchcraft and those different things and, you know, fortune telling and things like that. And so it's a spiritual act that's not of God. And so it's basically something that's borderline satanic, and he doesn't, it's a going against his will, because you should be seeking his will and his word, and not necessarily seeking other means of spiritual.
I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, it's fine.
I mean, it's also possible, as we know today, like a lot of people, I mean, especially when we think about astrology, can really like get really seriously into that, and you know, we get a lot. We don't get the truth. We don't get the complete truth.
Yeah.
We may get things that might indicate something, but ultimately, what comes out is a lot of lies, and you know, God doesn't want us subscribing to lies. He wants us subscribing to the truth.
Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. I fell into the astrology, the astrology.
Yeah, I think a lot of people
a while
do.
Back, and I was like, I just looked back at it, and I was like, this literally makes no sense. All it does is divide people.
Exactly.
I don't
right.
want to go on a rant about that, but like, it's so like, it's like the worst thing ever. Okay.
Yeah, like you're this, I'm
you're
that.
This,
you know,
this,
we can't ever associate or have any fellowship.
Yeah,
you know,
the worst thing ever. Yeah. All because I was born at the end of February.
Yeah, right.
What? So, anyways, I digress. Don't fortune tell. That's against the rules. He don't like it. All right, cool. Thank you. Do not turn to mediums nor necromancers. Do not seek them out. To make yourselves unclean by them. I am the Lord your God. That's verse 31. You shall stand up for the gray head and honor the face of an old man, and you shall fear your God, I am the Lord. When a stranger sojourns with you in your land, you shall not do him wrong. You shall treat the stranger who sojourns with you as the native among you, and you shall love him as yourself if you are strangers in that land. For you are strangers in the land of Egypt. I am the Lord your God. So, verse 31 talks about, you know, kind of like what we were talking about earlier, necromancy or mediums. Once again, spiritual practices that are just not of God and are against his design, and so he does not want us to associate anything with those things, because at the end of the day they do corrupt, and so his people should be clean and holy. You shall not stand up for the gray head and honor the face of an old man. So basically honor your elders is similar to honor your parents. Saying this because it's a significant thing, and it's something that they should take seriously. And then in verse 33 and on, he talks about strangers coming to the land and how you treat them as though they were your neighbor, you know, your loved one. You treat them with love and kindness and care. So he wants his people to treat others that way because of how they were strangers in Egypt and God brought them out. God still accepted them until they were strangers in Egypt, and God took care of them. God brought them out of that situation. So he wants us to spread, you know, be examples of him and kind of spread that around. So, or at least he wants the Jews to be examples of him. Spread that around. And so, verse 35, you shall do no wrong in judgment, measures of length, quantities. You shall have just balances, just weights, a just ephah, and a just hin. I am the Lord your God who brought you out of the land of Egypt, and you shall observe all my statutes and all my rules and do them. I am the Lord. So in this section, he just talks about when dealing with, I'm guessing, merchandising, which is having just weights and not, you know, swindling people or hustling people. And so, just being honest with your business and the way you sell things and the way you do business. Because a lot of times I feel like we take care of the major honesties, like don't tell bold-faced lies, don't do this, don't do that. But then we don't think about like the minor things like this, where, you know, if you're using faulty equipment to you know, do dealings with people, you know, is that being honest? Are you actually giving them a fair product or whatever you're doing? You know, that can be applied to a lot of different things. So thinking about the little nuances of life and, you know, different ways of how, you know, is this completely truthful? Am I being deceitful in this way? And so I sometimes think about those things, and I think it's very valuable to kind of assess ourselves and check ourselves in that way to make sure that we're not doing anything wrong in that regard. Not to just say that we should always be panicked thinking about, oh my gosh, am I doing this wrong, am I doing that wrong, but just to be mindful of that. Okay, does anybody have any questions about chapter, or any overarching thoughts about chapter 19?
Just thinking about just applications. We've all been there in the shopping line, and they accidentally give me a dollar over, and the natural reaction is, whoa, my lucky day. Or someone, you know, a bill fall out of their wallet or whatever, and say, hey, it's my lucky day. Just because something is easy does not make it right. It seems like there's so many of these things. You know, it would be easy to take advantage of a stranger because he has no roots around you, and it'd be easy to take advantage of him. But treat him as your neighbor. Especially verses 33 and 34 speak more than just the strangers. It's like an instruction, an invitation to sympathize with others and sympathize with the difficulties that they have, which is a challenge for me. Just being sympathetic towards others, realizing that, wow, I have been where they have been. Sympathizing towards others who have a need, realizing that, wow, God's taking care of every need that I have. Really, I am needy, and God's taking care of those needs. I need to be sympathetic towards the needs of others. Good lesson for us.
Another example I would think that kind of relates to that is the flip version, where it's like somebody takes advantage of you. You know, how do you react? You know, do you react in hatred and spite? Or do you start making a scene of yourself, or do you just react humbly to that situation? I've been there a couple of times, and so it's these situations are very nuanced, but we definitely have to pay attention to how we behave in that.
Yeah, just being sympathetic toward, you know, someone says something that's not very nice. Being sympathetic and say, well, how many times have I said something that's not very nice? And I wish people would forgive me more. Having that attitude, that's a good point.
I think you can expand on a lot of these, or like make the use case or how we apply these. But like just listening to you talk through a lot of this was you shall not, you shall not, you shall not. But there's a few places where it's you shall. And like those kind of caught my attention. So at the end of verse 15, it says, but you are to judge your neighbor fairly. Like, that's a big idea, and something we hear about a lot. And then in verse 37, it says, you shall thus observe all my statutes and my ordinances, and do them, I am the Lord. I almost feel like those are like summary statements, like really pay attention to these things, not that the other things aren't important, but it's like, hey, this is how you need to be acting. There's all these different cases that we talked about, and you shouldn't do these things, but in these scenarios, and bring it all together, this is what you need.
I think that's a really good point, that what you should do is what brings it all together. Because if you just tell somebody what they shouldn't do all day, they're still going to be kind of left aimless. It's like, all right, well, I have all these things that I can't do. What can I do? And so, yeah, when you bring it all together with this is how you should act and this is what you should do, as opposed to that, it gives you a clear direction. And so, yeah, very good point, John.
Yeah, I think like this section where it's almost like God's responding to you. He set out the Ten Commandments, which show a lot of intent of how we should act, how we should be. But then, you know, there's always that God, it's like, throws out the crazy hypothetical situation.
Yeah.
And what's the gives you some of those examples of what you should be doing in those specific situations, but more importantly, it shows the intent behind those little laws that God set was to help guide us for, you know, for those other hypothetical situations that aren't specifically addressed as well.
All right, well, no one has any other thoughts. I'll move on to chapter 20. So chapter 20 is basically talking about punishments for a lot of these different things that we've been talking about and things as well. So verses 1 through 5, the Lord spoke to Moses again saying, say to the people of Israel, any of the people of Israel or of the strangers who sojourn in Israel who gives any of his children to Moloch shall surely be put to death. The people of the land shall stone him with stones. I myself will set my face against that man and will cut him off from among his people because he has given one of his children to Moloch to make my sanctuary unclean and to profane my holy name. And if the people of the land do at all close their eyes to that man when he gives one of his children to Moloch and do not put him to death, then I will set my face against that man and against his clan, and I will cut them off from among their people, him and all who follow him, in pouring after Moloch. And so in this section, he talks about something that's going on in the area, which is child sacrifice, which is something that is just deplorable. I honestly couldn't really believe that people, this was just something that people did, you know. And so he has to, the fact that he has to tell his own people that this is something good to do just kind of spoke a lot about the people who live there. And that if you left the Jews alone for long enough, they would actually eventually end up like the other nations. And so that's why he gives them these rules to try to distinguish from them. This is kind of just really sad. and in verses 4 and on, he actually goes on to say that if someone sees this happening and doesn't condemn that person, right, that they will also be condemned. So it's like, it's a zero tolerance. It's like, I won't tolerate people who do this, and I won't tolerate people who see this and allow it to happen, right? And so he's very clear on his position on this, and I think this is probably the most heavy-handed he's been for any of these things, which is understandable because of the action that's been taking place. So, yeah. It also shows that these types of sacrifices and these types of actions are, they make the land itself unholy. Like, they taint things to a completely different level than just, you know, an interpersonal relationship where you go and have relations with somebody you're not supposed to, which taints you and that person. It's like, it's something that taints the land, you know, and has an effect on, you know, more than just you. And so this is something that he wants them to take very seriously and is punishing very seriously.
And this is something that was part of that Moloch was the god of the Ammonites, but then several of the nations there would also participate in this. I don't know how far the worship of Moloch would go, but it was definitely, even the Israelites began to practice this. I think we were reading Ezekiel just yesterday, and there it talked about the god of Moloch, and the Israelites practicing this. Manasseh sacrificed his children to the god of Moloch. So how is it that the people of God could go to such lengths or go to this extreme? don't test those waters, because even the people of God will go to those extremes. And we look at this, the sacrifice of your own offspring, killing your own offspring, how bad can that be? But then at the same time, we also need to realize it's not a popular position, but we do need to realize that here in the United States, it happens all the time. With abortion, people sacrificing their children on the altar of success or on the altar of happiness, and killing their own offspring for their own benefit. it's not, it doesn't carry the same flavor of idolatry. It's very definitely something that's an abomination to God.
Verses 6 and on, a person turns to mediums and necromancers whoring after them. I will set my face against that person and will cut him off among his people. Consecrate yourselves, therefore, and be holy, for I am the Lord your God. Keep my statutes and do them. I am the Lord who sanctifies you. For anyone who curses his father and his mother shall surely be put to death, and has cursed his father. He has cursed his father or his mother. His blood is upon him. So, in this section we see, once again, restating what will happen to those who turn to mediums and necromancers. And this is basically the continuation of that from the last chapter. It also talks about, it says, I will set my face against that person and cut them off from their people. Right? And so we see that repeated over and over again. I will set my face against them. And so it's kind of like a disownment in a way, like I can't even look at you, you know? And so that's not a position you want to be if you were at one point God's child, to the point where like he's so outraged by what you've done that he can't even look at you, you know? So you know, it just shows the significance of these actions and how horrible you find them. Once again, he restates, keep my statutes and do them. I am the Lord your God who sanctifies you. I am the one who gives you life. I'm the one who makes you holy via these rules and regulations and these laws that I give you. And so in this way, we see that by giving these laws and these rules for us to follow, he in a way helps us get closer to him and sanctify us. So. And then we see him restate once again, anyone who curses their father or their mother shall be put to death. And so that's a continuation of what we were talking about earlier with honoring your parents. And so there's a punishment for, you know, being disrespectful and cursing your parents. And so it shows the significance of this parent-child relationship and how important it is and how important God sees it as, in that I think that once again, it's sad that a lot of people don't have good relationships with their parents, but it's definitely something that should be put into significance since it is punishable by death. So yeah, any other questions or thoughts about that? So, cool. And then this last section, it's like 3 seconds. So punishment for sexual immorality. If a man commits adultery with his wife or his neighbor, both the adulterer and the adulteress shall surely be put to death. If a man lies with his father's wife, he has uncovered his father's nakedness, both of them shall surely be put to death. He's just coming, covering a lot of the same situations we talked about before, 2 chapters ago. Stating the consequences for them, similar to what we see. So I don't need to go into detail about all these different, you know, situations that we've heard them all before. So there are different consequences, and I want to make note that there are like different consequences for different situations. It's not always you're put to death, but there are. Let's see. For example, verse 18: if a man lies with a woman during the menstrual period and uncovers her nakedness. He has made naked her fountain, and she has uncovered the fountain of her blood. Both of them shall be cut off from among their people. So in that we see that it's not always just, oh, you do this, you're put to death. But he definitely weighs it based on the situation. And so we see that he in that way punishes justly, and that he doesn't just say death across the line. You know. Ways based on the individual and the event and the situation. Next section, you shall be holy. So you shall therefore keep all my statutes and all my rules and do them, that the land where I am bringing you to, you may lead you to the where I'm bringing you to live may not vomit you out. So basically, keep my statutes, keep my laws so that in the land, so that you don't corrupt the land and end up leaving again. And you shall not walk in the customs of nations that I'm driving out before you. And so this is restating what we see in the beginning of 18, where it's, I'm bringing you to this land, you're not supposed to act like these people, or the people you came from, or the people around you that surround this area. You act as the people that I destined you to be. You act as the people that I want you to be, because I am the Lord. And so, in this section, we see, once again, later on, verse 27, man or woman who is medium or a necromancer shall surely be put to death, and they shall be stoned with stones, their blood shall be upon them. So we now see the punishment for being the one who is the medium, not just the one who seeks out the medium. So there's a lot of different punishments and results for all these different things, but the overarching lesson I want to leave you all today with, unless you have any questions, is Israel was meant to be different because of God, and God is holy, so his people must be holy. And so we can't expect any other outcome if we live this the same as the world around us. And so that's just the overarching idea I kind of want to leave you with, is that just like Israel is given decrees and laws and things to follow, he also gives them a way out and a way to prosper and a clear direction for us to go in. He wants us to be holy. He doesn't want us to act like the rest of the world, because the rest of the world is acting of the flesh. And so that's the main thought I wanted to leave you with, and what I want you to think about. So I know this wasn't the most clean Bible study, but I hope that I was able to convey a lot of these thoughts well, and hopefully you know you guys can think on a lot of these things and meditate on them. Any other last question before we dismiss? All right, cool. Thank you guys for having me and being patient with me. So we're gonna take a, I'm assuming, a 10-minute break. So 11:04.